That's the first thing I want to do. But thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Our pleasure.
So what insight did we gain from our conversation with Johnny Miller? The reality on the ground in Ukraine is very different than what is being portrayed in Western media. It is virtually impossible to rationally discuss this war and to suggest...
Well, we're breaking away from our regular programming now to cover live a keynote speech by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, on the occasion of Sacred Defense Week, in a meeting with veteran soldiers and commanders of 8 years of sacred defense. Okay, let us now listen in to the leader's speech.
Cyberspace with respect to this issue of sacred defense, they have been involved in the...
Right, we're breaking away live, as I said, we're breaking away from our regular programming live to cover a speech by the leader of the Islamic Revolution on the occasion of Sacred Defense Week with veteran soldiers and commanders of 8 years of sacred defense. At the moment, we have the Joint Chiefs of Staff of Iran's Armed Forces currently making a speech. Let's listen in to his speech.
Regarding creating curricula related to the sacred defense and also having to designating two academic units at universities in collaboration with the Supreme Cultural Revolution Council and the Ministry of Higher Education. There's also a technical discipline for master's degree and also at the PhD level for the analysis of sacred defense. Literary works have also been produced. There has been the distribution of work, and we are witnessing a growing trend in this field at the national level. The number of books produced in the field of sacred defense, there has been a 240% increase since 2015. Regarding the production of audiobooks, more than 1,200 audiobooks have been produced for smartphones based on the approved directives and through cooperation with the Ministry of Culture and Islamic Guidance in order to prevent deviations. In the past 4 years, there has been supervision over the publication of 7,000 literary and historical books in the field of sacred defense. Based on your emphasis regarding the memories related to the sacred defense, there have been many gatherings held, attended by war veterans and commanders, senior commanders. There has been a considerable growth in the past 4 years. 10,000 hours of such gatherings have been held. So far, 24 cultural centers and sacred defense museums have become operational in provinces, and with God's grace, 36 cultural centers and museums will become operational till 1404 Iranian calendar. And that would be useful for war veterans and also for the youths. The International Museum for Combating Imperialism and Hegemonic Powers will also become operational. And the tombs of the martyrs have also become attractive sites and inspirational places. There are major plans regarding sacred defense. These are considered as scientific researches, and they can be considered as a major asset. And this has been fulfilled by researchers in collaboration with organizations affiliated to the armed forces. And elites and researchers can have access to these researchers till the end of the year. And with respect to the status of science and technology in sacred defense, there was a research seminar held last will be held based on the national Rahiyan-e Noor document, and due to the cooperation of 40 relevant institutions and organizations. Prior to the pandemic, coronavirus pandemic, more than 42 million persons have visited the war zones, the war fronts, and many of these persons have visited these war zones repeatedly. And speaking of the safety of these convoys that you have emphasized, this has been, we have attached importance to the safety of convoys and with respect to the increasing number of pilgrims, and we have made considerable efforts, and efforts have been made particularly by the police force and the rescue teams, and there has been a decline in casualties and has reached the figure of zero. And in accordance with your remarks, in the year 2017, the war veterans have been praised, and every year the number of these persons have reached 1 million. This has been a valuable action. It has been realized through cooperation by the organizations affiliated to the armed forces, the Friday prayer leaders and the governors. This is indicative of national resolve to pay homage to the war veterans. Their capacities have been utilized, and this is also a plan underway. And today, we are making use of such capacities in social, cultural, and cultural activities, and also dealing with natural disasters, and also they are present in order to delineate the facts and realities. In conclusion, I wish to thank all the commanders of the armed forces, the officials, the governor generals, the Friday prayer leaders, the university deans and the seminaries and the educational centers. I wish to thank them all for disseminating the culture and values of the sacred defense. I wish to appreciate you again, and I wish to request you to address the participants.
Well, you have just listened to a speech by Brigadier General Mohammad Bagheri, the Joint Chiefs of Staff of Iran's Armed Forces. Brigadier General Mohammad Bagheri just delivered a speech on the occasion of Sacred Defense Week here in Iran. And we're now, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, is just about to start his keynote speech. Let's listen in.
Of God, the merciful, the compassionate, salutations to the Prophet of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God be upon him and his progeny. And salutations to his pure household. This is one of the best meetings, one of the most needed and useful sessions that is being held in this Husseinia, named after the late Imam. Praising the war veterans is the duty of all. And those who are the old masters of every discipline are respected. The sacred defense has been era filled with excitements and filled with the various events and meaningful and useful. And these are the events that are effective, have been effective for our past, for today, are effective for today and the future. Therefore, the veterans belonging to this era must be respected. I voice my respect to you, the veterans of the years of sacred defense, either the individuals who are present here and also those who are listening in various cities and are present in the gatherings, and also tens of thousands of forces who are not here, but they are amongst the veterans. I wish to express my respect to all the veterans. They can be interpreted as as-sabiqun, as-sabiqun. That means those who detected the necessities prior to others and they moved hastily in order to meet the demands at that time in the battlefield, in the field of jihad and sacrifice. Therefore, respecting such individuals is the duty of all of us. More than 30 years have passed since the end of the sacred defense. In fact, one can draw a conclusion from far away when you are in the midst of an event, in the middle of an event. One may not be able to realize all the aspects and dimensions of the event. When you were making efforts in the middle of the events of the sacred defense, at that time you could not be able to realize all the aspects of the event and also realize its depth, its effects and implications. But today that is feasible. And one can realize the sacred defense as it was. And I think that as time passes, if what was mentioned by General Bagheri, if these measures are implemented properly and attention, and if attention is paid to the outputs, then this will boost awareness and the people will come to learn more about the sacred defense in a better way. Speaking of history, this juncture can be considered as a bright era and an influential one, and this is necessary and must be implemented. Now, speaking of measures that have to be taken, and its narration, I did mention all these in the past, and today I'm going to express a few words about it at the end of my speech. But attention must be paid as an essential issue. You know many things about the sacred defense, but the new generation doesn't know many things related to the sacred defense. This is what I'm trying to say. I'm familiar with the sacred defense, and you have been involved in the years of the sacred defense. We know the events, and we should do something so that the new generation would also come to know the sacred defense in the same way. That's what I expect from myself and the others. I'm going to mention some facts about the sacred defense, and my aim is to inform the youths and teenagers. I'm in contact with the youths to some extent. Sometimes questions are posed, and I realize that they are unaware of many things. I want to inform them about the facts and realities related to the sacred defense. I'm going to speak of few words, and in fact those in charge must take up the necessary actions. Now, the facts that we take into account with respect to the sacred defense has been said several times. Today these facts are not merely claims. In the past, we claimed that the world powers were fighting against us and that it was an international war, the East and the West, NATO and others. Today, so that was what we claimed at that time. Someone may have said that you're making a claim, but today they are saying these things themselves. Today they are publishing documents, and one can see their confessions and their documents. And our claims are being proven today. The point I wish to emphasize is that the military attack on the country after the revolution was not unexpected. Why? Because Saddam was crazy for power and he attacked us. But the global arrogance was backing Saddam, mostly the West and also the former Soviet Union and countries supporting it. They backed Saddam. They encouraged Saddam to attack us. Of course, he actually was thirsty for power, and they encouraged him, and they so-called showed him a green light, and they promised Saddam to support him, and they did support him, and they fulfilled their promise to support Saddam. So we were not just dealing with Saddam and the Ba'athist Party, but in fact, it was the global arrogance and the domineering powers. Their attack on a revolutionary system was something natural because they were angry of the revolution, and that was their reaction to this great revolution. This revolution did many things, and at that time, we may not have been aware of the dimensions of these events, but they knew, they were aware of these dimensions at that time. The Islamic Revolution of Iran was not merely a political defeat at that time. It was not just a political defeat for the hegemonic powers. It was a threat to the hegemonic empire. Perhaps you have not seen those events in the press at that time because of your age, but in those days, the nations and the governments were affiliated either to this faction or the other one. There were various affiliations and orientations. In other words, one who relied on the Western system, he could speak against the Eastern system and vice versa. To have a nation acting independently, independent of this hegemonic empire, and stand steadfast and express itself and convey a new message, this was not tolerable. It was not tolerable in any way. To have a nation not fearing the U.S., not being intimidated by the political and military power dominating the world at that time, this was not tolerable for them. Also, to have a political system that was established in a place that's been the point of hopefulness and the point of greediness for the powers, especially the U.S., I don't know whether you read, whether you have time to read books and articles. The viewpoint shared by the Westerners and the Americans at that time, particularly the American and Western powers, the view they had towards Iran, their viewpoint showed their confidence in domination and that they can benefit from the rich resources without any concern. You see a revolution unfolding in such a place, and you come across a personality such as the late Imam, and he mobilized the people. The people with the country with a population of more than 30 million at that time. And the nation showed steadfastness. So they decided to take revenge. And they wanted to deal a reciprocal blow. And they did dealt many blows, but they were not effective. They launched a coup. They launched an aerial attack in Tabaz. And they instigated many ethnic groups, but they failed. And they had to impose a military war, and that had to be done by a neighbor. A full-fledged military war had to be carried out by a neighbor. They found that neighbor easily, and there was a man who was very ambitious, he was crazy for power, and he had such background, and he attacked Iran. So this military move was not unexpected. It had to take place. At that time, I was at the. I attended meetings at the Defense Ministry, and I spoke with senior military officials of the country. They had some guesses, but the revolutionary people and individuals, they did not expect such a serious military move. There were border skirmishes, but. But we did not realize that such a full-fledged war would take place. But at that time, we were inexperienced. But those who had more experience at that time, they had realized that such a thing will happen. The president of Guinea, that was a prominent figure in Africa, he was an independent person. He traveled to Iran several times. It was in the early days of my presidency, and he privately told me he had come with a delegation in order to ask us to declare a ceasefire. The war had started 1 or 2 years had passed since the start of the war, and they had come in order to just create a ceasefire. He told me in private that you should know. He said that the war was inevitable because if one fails to defeat the revolution and make the revolutionaries just bow down, kneel down, that a war would be imposed. And he referred to several instances. That was done by the hegemonic powers. He was an old man at that time, and he told me this, he mentioned this point. He said that imperialism, and as we call it, the global arrogance, will continue this trend and will impose a war. So this is a fact. Some may launch propaganda saying, why did you get engaged in a war with Iraq? As if we had just launched an assault, or why did they ask, why did you continue the war after liberating Khorram, after capturing Khorramshahr? and there was the bitter event in the last attack, and the Imam accepted the resolution, and I accepted it as the president and told the UN, and after that, Iraq attacked us. After accepting resolution 598, Iraq had was behind the border, particularly in Khuzestan region. It had retreated from the occupied zones. It moved towards Hamid base, that was a sensitive area, and Iraq entered the country again, and our forces from every corner of this country actually slapped the aggressors in their face. There was the issue of the event of Mersad in western part of the country, and they think that after the issue of Khorramshahr, if we stopped it, everything had been come to a halt. But that's not true. When Khorramshahr was captured in Beit al-Maqaddas operation, the enemy's troops were still in many parts of the country. One should refrain from making irresponsible statements. That was not the matter to start a war or to attack. The issue was the strategic policy by the enemy, supported by the global arrogance, the domineering powers. They wanted to make the nation kneel down, and the Islamic Republic establishment that stood steadfast in the face of the enemies. They wanted to actually destroy the establishment. That was the aim pursued by the enemies. This is the first fact, one of the important realities related to the sacred defense. To know that, to actually learn about the other party, why did it attack us? This is one of the important matters that I mentioned. The second fact is that that's of paramount importance, is that the power of the revolution, the glorious strength, and the growing strength of the revolution, and the Imam's leadership, that was quite an effective element, and also the outstanding features of the Iranian nation. These three elements, if I remember, if there's time, I will refer to those features. These three elements turned the threat into an opportunity. War is a bitter event. It's a definite threat. But the power of the revolution and the Imam's leadership and the features of the Iranian nation managed to turn this major threat into a major opportunity. And this is one of the passionate chapters of the sacred defense, and a great deal of work must be done in this field. The opportunities that was created by the sacred defense for the country, these opportunities are unknown for the majority of the people. I will briefly mention some of them. But of course, the realities are much more. What were the goals pursued? Why did Saddam attack us? In the first place, his intention was to disintegrate the country. He wanted to separate an important part of the country, namely Khuzestan. The people of Khuzestan and the Arabs in Khuzestan put on display one of the best defenses in the face of the enemies. People from all parts of the country traveled to Khuzestan, but I can refer to Ali Hashemi as who is an Arab in Ahvaz, who was an Arab in Ahvaz. He was a real struggler and combatant. He is among the most prominent figures of the sacred defense. That was the move made by the people of Khuzestan in the face of the enemies. That was the first stage. In the next stages, as I said, the enemies were after making the Iranian nation kneel down, and they wanted to overthrow the Islamic Republic, and the enemies wanted to change the country's destiny, the destiny that was depicted by the revolution. They wanted to change this destiny. That was the intention pursued by the enemies. They wanted to actually somehow cut the voice of the and suffocate the voices of the Iranian nation, because the Iranian nation had something new to present to the world. The Islamic Republic was something new. Religious popular rule is something new, and it's a new arrangement and a new style for people's lives. They wanted to hamper this message because it's a message of steadfastness and resistance and not giving in to bullying, and it's a message of combating oppression and combating international discrimination. They wanted to cut this, prevent this message from being disseminated. Well, the nation had managed to put an end to a corrupt regime that was affiliated to the foreigners, and at the same time, it managed to humiliate a major power such as the U.S. And they wanted to just make this act in such a way so that other nations would learn a lesson, so that in case of any uprising against the U.S., they would be suppressed like the Iranian nation. In fact, they wanted to close the gateways of resistance. That was their ultimate goal. And what was the response by the Iranian nation? The Iranian nation foiled and nullified all these goals and actually made progress. What happened was completely contrary to what the enemies were seeking. As I said, this is a passionate chapter filled with excitements. The enemies made a great deal of spendings, but the Iranian nation acted quite contrary to the enemy's wishes. As I said, the enemies wanted to separate part of the country. The people living there, they stood in a steadfast manner, and they did not pay attention to the temptations of being Arab. Or so I was near Ahvaz in a village. I saw an Arab family when the Ba'athist troopers withdrew, and when we entered, when they saw us, they wanted to, they became very happy and they wanted to celebrate. They were Arabs and they even did not speak Farsi. And this is something I personally witnessed. The Arabs stood in the face of the enemies and even dedicated martyrs. So the enemies made constant temptations and they had elements within the people that worked for them, but the enemies failed to attain their goal. Secondly, the sacred defense turned into a field for the manifestation of the Iranian nation's moral virtues and religious values. The nation has certain features, and they have historical, cultural and climatic background and backgrounds, and sometimes these features are not manifested. The sacred defense turned into a ground so that all these virtues would be manifested, the generosities, the acts of struggle, and believing in religion. Who could believe this? Who could actually imagine this? The families that eagerly sent their children to the battlefronts, and they even assumed that they would be killed, but they eagerly sent them to the battlefronts from all across the country. Generous fathers and mothers and dedicated spouses. And the whole country turned into a defensive depth for the battlefronts and on the front line. You see, it was the western and southern parts of the country on the front line, but the whole country turned into a defensive depth for this front line. Either those who went to the battlefronts and or those who supported them, and those who provided guidance, and those who encouraged the people, and those who actually delineated the religious basis of the war. And these are the outstanding features of the Iranian nation that was truly manifested. Public support and gifts by the people in urban, rural areas, the mosques, the seminaries, academic centers, and universities, they all served and the country, and they defended the country and the revolution. This was the manifestation of the features of the Iranian nation. Speaking of the other achievements, one can refer to the people's unity. Efforts were made by some in order to create differences at the most senior level. When the war started, there was a difference between the difference of view between the president and the prime minister, and it had, the people were divided into two groups, and even in families there were differences of views, and the grouplets were after creating differences, creating discord amongst the people. and the sacred defense turned this nation into an integrated and unified nation. And the whole country became united. And of course, there are always some exceptions, but the majority of the people became integrated in order to serve the sacred defense. Another opportunity was the military, the strength of the country. When the war started, we were not in a good condition militarily, and prior to the revolution, the army had been harmed. And during the revolution, after the revolutions, many blows were dealt to the army, and IRGC was not yet deep-rooted. The sacred defense, on the one hand, turned into a test of loyalty by the army. A test of loyalty for the army with regard to the revolution, and there were prominent figures in the army conducting major actions. And on the other hand, there was IRGC that actually blossomed. So, in the absence of the sacred defense, even the physical aspect of IRGC may not have continued till today, like the what happened to the committees, but it was the sacred defense that contributed to the discipline formation of IRGC. The popularity of the armed forces increased. When people become interested in the armed forces, that will bring about a feeling of security in that country. When people have trust in army and IRGC, that will bring about a feeling of security among the people. This feeling of security is very important, and this was realized. And the sacred defense just created that feeling of security for the people. I should emphasize this, that such a strength will continue provided that the armed forces proceed in an accelerated way, and you should not actually be behind the enemies. So far we have acted properly, and there has been good progress so far. And that's my judgment, that the progress has been good, but you should always bear in mind the dangers and threats posed by halting these activities. And by halting the activities, that means retreat. It doesn't mean to stop at a point. When you stop for a moment, you will be... It's like retreating from your position because the enemy is moving forward, and the military officials must pay attention to this, and the government officials must also pay attention to this. That is obligatory to support the armed forces. Today, fortunately, we have reached the point of deterrence. And Speaking of military and security status, we are in a stage of deterrence from the view of external threats. There's no concern, and we have this feeling of power. Others know this, and the enemies know this. And speaking of the armed forces, you know very well those who were not present or today's young generation that has not seen the battlefront. Sometimes it is said that there's been a wave of young people. That was not true. In other words, this means that there has been rationality and prudence in a tangible manner. Today, it was said in the report by General Bagheri, some of the methods and tactics that were used in the course of the sacred defense, they were creative, and they should be included in textbooks. And the tactic used in Fathul Mubin operation, this can be taught, it can be shown to the world. It was not a minor task. I'm referring to its design. Its performance is a separate matter, or in Baitul Muqaddas operation. The enemy was on the western part. And the desert in southern Ahvaz had been captured by the enemy. We had to come from the north to confront the enemy. That's what you can realize in a superficial manner, but the designers at the major command centers come across a new path. Instead of confronting from the north, they move from the east, and they cut Karun and lay a siege on the enemy. And when the enemy, when facing this, the enemy was fearful of coming under a siege and just left part of that area. This is indicative of one's prudence and rationality. You can see similar measures in many of our operational zones. It existed in the west, in the south, and we have seen such cases in a repeated manner, or Valfaj 8 crossing Arvand and the very important operation of Khaybar. What were done there were unique, and this indicated rationality. Speaking of turning threats into opportunities, I can say that the sacred defense proved a principle for the nation. The principle is that safeguarding the country and creating deterrence can be attained through resistance, not through giving in to the enemy. This has become a principle. In those early days, there were some who believed in surrender. But they did not openly mention this, but the nature was the same as surrender. An imam acted steadfastly and in various stages. In general, the sacred defense, in the course of the sacred defense jihad, the nation realized that safeguarding the country can be attained through resistance, not by giving in to the enemy. This is something realized by the nation, turning into a principle for us. We benefited from such a principle in various political, economic, and cultural arenas, and this is our standpoint, the standpoint of resistance, taking action and progress instead of retreating or giving in to the enemies. This feeling created domestic self-confidence. The active elements inside the country, the politicians, cultural activists, they had a feeling of self-confidence with regard to a variety of issues that one may come across in the country. And the enemy learned this lesson to consider our resistance and its calculations. In this way, we have managed to foil many of the schemes by the enemies, our political forces and military forces. Managed to foil the enemies. The enemy imposed maximum pressure policy. It failed. The enemy presented the scheme as the new Middle East. It failed. And the enemy somehow started to violate our borders from land and air, and the aggressors on the sea were captured and the drone was downed. This is the meaning of national self-confidence. This is the principle learned in the course of the sacred defense, that one can safeguard the country only through resistance. There is another fact. Of course, there are a lot to say about these issues. There's no time. Speaking of major issues that I re-emphasize is the correct narration of the war. I have emphasized this on several occasions. The activities carried out so far have been good. As I said this as we visited the exhibition, what has taken place so far related to the infrastructure related to cultural, political, historical activities, and these infrastructures can be used. But these activities